power of resolve. Or sometimes we use the word resolution. I'd like to explore what it is, the wholesome, balanced energy of resolve as a verb, to resolve, to do something, to be something, to say something, to incline our minds and hearts and bodies in a certain direction. How is it experienced as a feeling in the heart, in the mind? How does it connect to how it gets carried out in one's life? So I'd like to tell you some stories that help you experience it for yourselves, kind of translate it in your own lives. Being conscious of what is unwise resolve, when that comes up, how to be mindful of that so we're not kind of caught in this unwise kind of stiffness of how we think things should be in our lives. What prevents resolve, balanced resolve? What contaminates it? What perfects it in our lives? So I'd like to explore this particular energy in the context of the 10 paramis. The paramis is an ancient word. Parami is an ancient word, which means perfections. And it's perfections of the highest quality. It's a Pali word. Pali is one of the ancient languages that the Buddha's teachings were recorded in. How many of you know about paramis? You've probably studied them through Rodney or some of your group leaders. Yeah. I like to think of the word paramount. Paramount, it means of the highest value. And this is what the word parami is inclining towards. Perfections of the highest value, the highest quality. So over the years, I've been practicing the paramis as you have. I've been studying them, reading about them, taking courses about them from my own teachers and from colleagues of mine, even going online and when other people have given teachings of paramis through tricycle. I love to do that and learning about it, different angles of it from different ways, different levels of learning about them from other people. These are the qualities of mind and heart which help us live in harmony with the world, which help us live in harmony with people around us, in harmony with our own inner values, our highest values that we sometimes don't remember. So along the way, you've heard a lot of Dharma talks about each one of these. And I'd like to name them again for you. And so for some of you, these will be new. These are the 10 paramis that are talked about in the Dharma or in the Buddhist teaching. The first is generosity or dana. The second is morality, which is kind of a word that isn't always translated in a way that feels kind of balanced in our society. And I like to think of that word more as harmonious living, morality, harmonious living. The third parami is renunciation, or letting go. And I'll be speaking about letting go during this weekend and the parami of renunciation. And then there's wisdom, the wisdom of seeing things as they are. Energy is the fifth parami. We need energy to keep our moment-to-moment balance in life, to keep our long-range view in balance also. And then there's patience. The Buddha said that patience is the supreme virtue. It's the one that is needed for all of these other virtuous qualities to be perfected. Truthfulness is a really important one. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Upandita, said, How can we open to the truth if we cannot speak the truth? So truthfulness is the most important, very important of all of these paramis. And then there is resolve or resolution, that turning of the mind to something far-reaching that will help us in every aspect of life. All of these paramis are things that we can have resolves for, resolves to be more generous, live in harmony in a deeper way, have more wisdom, let go more easily, patience, truthfulness, loving kindness is the ninth parami, and then equanimity, a mind that is spacious and balanced and clear all at the same time. So all of these paramis and these ways of being are part of the bigger context that I'm speaking in. The more these paramis are developed, the more we're happy within ourselves. I think that if at any one moment we experience a moment of loving kindness, the world changes. The way we see life in that moment changes. When we speak the truth, for example, and we speak it with loving kindness also, and with some kind of knowing the timeliness of it, knowing the right place to speak the truth, we feel a sense of power inside. We have a clear sense of well-being when any one of these paramis are experienced, when they're developed, when we incline our minds to it intentionally, or when they come about simply because they've become the default setting of the mind and heart. There's a deep sense of well-being. There's a sense of accepting the conditions around us, no matter what they are, because they're already here. Not that we can turn back the clock and change them, but we can open to the equanimity of this is the way it is. We can have that clear view of knowing the moment and then doing what we can to add something beneficial to the next moment. Responsive with compassion and wisdom. So all of these paramis are so, so important. They're not particularly Buddhist. When we look at other religions or other ways of teachings, ways of being in the world, they're valued by good people everywhere. Valued and recognized by people of all faiths and of all perspectives. There are qualities within us. There are moments when we can just see, you know, maybe a moment of meanness that's going to come out of our mouths, but we get a little glimmer of that metta or that loving kindness within us. And then all of a sudden our minds and hearts turn in that direction. And then we feel filled with loving kindness and protected. Deeply protected by that sense of well-being. And in that moment, we nurture that seed. When we feel a moment of giving up, for example, and then perhaps you felt it during this last 40, 35 minutes of sitting, and then you have that moment of resolve, of turning the mind in that direction of, no, just being with this. Let's just be with this moment of feeling giving up moment. And then feeling that sense of strength, that sense of power that came to you in that moment. That's when we nurture that seed of that particular parami. It's the bedrock and strength of developing all the other paramis. In fact, the Buddha said, these are the four resolves, the four major resolves that he spoke about. The resolve for wisdom, the resolve for truth, the resolve for generosity, and the resolve for peace. One should not neglect wisdom. One should preserve truth. One should cultivate generosity. And one should train in peace. And that's what we're doing here this evening. We're really training the mind and heart in wisdom, in peace, in letting go, in turning the mind towards the moment-to-moment truth of life, seeing how it really is, moment-to-moment. So when you've had a very clear experience of resolve in your heart, in your mind, in your body, what does that feel like to you? Just take a moment to close your eyes and think back, maybe in the last few minutes of being here, maybe in your life, when you've had a resolve to act in a certain way, an aspiration, to refrain from doing something that was not beneficial, to let go, to turn your mind and heart towards peace. What was that feeling like within you? Maybe there's not a word. Maybe there's just a sense that you can recognize. If there's a word or there's a sense of that, remember that. Remember the moment of that resolve, or the moments of it, turning your mind and heart, your life, your action, your words, your thoughts, in a particular direction. Sometimes some descriptions, some words that connect to that feeling that I have is steadfast and balanced determination. How many of you are parents? You must know what steadfast determination is. I don't know about balanced. I have four grown children. It's not always balanced, but steadfast. There's a deep sense of stability. There's a decisiveness that I'm not going to let myself or them get in trouble. There's a single-mindedness. And at times, when I'm not weakened under the challenges of life, I feel a really deep sense of devotion to my aspirations in life, the short-term ones, the long-term ones. There's a sense of really deliberateness, of unwavering clarity of purpose. And I know I'm not the only one in the room. You've all had challenges in your own lives, and you've had to overcome them. And sometimes you've just had to let go of that you couldn't overcome it. And that letting go is also a resolve. Resolution involves knowing what your aspiration is sometimes, all the time. It's not just having a resolve out of nowhere. It's maybe a resolve to get through the day or get through a particular difficult period of time. So it's having that conscious knowing of where you want to turn your mind and your heart. It may be towards a parami, towards one of these high values that you may have in your life, that you're going to get through this with gentleness, or you're going to try to be more patient as we go through certain periods of our life. It's keeping a conscious, gentle connection with knowing what our aspiration is. So one of the first things I want to point out is not just this determination that's steadfast and balanced, this stability, this devotion, this clarity of purpose. But it's also that gentle moment to moment or day to day conscious connection with it, with whatever our resolution for the year or our life is, just remembering it all the time. So we're not just blowing in the wind. We have a clear sense of what the direction is we have in our lives. And we've got our hand on the rudder, and we're steering the sails for ourselves. We're not just letting the wind, whatever winds come, whatever they come, we make, whatever they are, we make the adjustments. I have a yogi friend who's been celebrating 30 years, over 30 years of being sober now through the help of the 12-step program and AA. And on her 20th anniversary, she was doing a one-month retreat with my husband, Steve Armstrong, and myself on Maui. And it was like, wow, a one-month retreat to celebrate her 20th year. And during that time, we commented to her that it was wonderful that her aspiration has been so clear through all these years, and that she must have had a really strong determination to stay strong and sober for the 20 years up to that point. And she said, no, it wasn't always unwavering, and it wasn't strong in the beginning. Or sometimes it's not so strong in any one given day or moment. But she said it was a day-to-day conscious intention to know what her aspiration was for her life and to make a commitment day by day or every time she felt the weakness coming up. She had to restate what her commitment was and to stay devoted to it day by day by day, to be clear in that moment. So it wasn't a strident oomph for her, but a gentle, persevering energy. So it's not just knowing what your aspiration is, but it's really paying attention to the energy behind that aspiration, keeping a connection to that aspiration, knowing what it is, but touching base with that energy behind it, keeping it gentle, clear, persevering, moment to moment, day by day. When we do this, we know why it's so important to have a sense of resolve, to know when it's strong and to know when it's weak, so that we can bring some strength to that opportunity to have more resolve. A sense of resolve gives us a deep and genuine feeling of power and strength and stability. Just think about your own lives and how it was for you. Maybe a certain moment of your life comes to you right now when you felt like you were going to buckle under, or kind of you felt the weakness that you couldn't go on, but you did. And that strength that you felt in that moment, stay connected with that strength, not with just what your commitment is for your aspiration, but stay connected with that strength, that stability, to be aligned with our aspiration is really powerful. It's the light that helps us see the path beneath our feet. We feel the wind at our backs, that gentle wind that kind of moves us forward gently. Energetically, it feels like it's guiding us to the highest and or deepest values that we have in life, not just because we don't want to buckle under that weakness in that moment, but because it's really helping us to gain more patience, more wisdom, more resolve, more compassion for ourselves and others. All those great things that make us a human being that can really be a light to others, our own families, our own children in our lives. Stay connected with our short-term aspirations. Some of these short-term aspirations take a lifetime to stay connected with, like having compassion for ourselves and others during difficult periods of our life, raising our children, finishing a project, learning a new skill, like we're taking yoga or a dance class, mastering the skill of like nonviolent communication, NVC, which is a worthy thing to take up, eating and living a more healthy lifestyle. Perhaps it's just lessening the footprint, the carbon footprint that we have, we're making on this earth. Getting a degree. Some of us in our older years are going back to school. Our good friend and caretaker of our land, he just got his nursing degree a week ago. Brian, some of you know him. He just got his nursing degree, and he really applied his energy for 3 years while being the caretaker and doing all of his duties on the land. And boy, he really went through some ups and downs, but he kept in touch with his aspiration, and he kept in touch with his strength, his resolve to stay with it, to stay the course. Those may be short-term aspirations, but the far-reaching aspirations are what the paramis are all about. Generosity, equanimity, renunciation, resolution. They're the aspirations that support the requisite for enlightenment, for full liberation. I know most of us on the path, a lot of us, don't think about enlightenment or full liberation. But some people do. Actually, I do. And it's said that the bodhisattvas, all the Buddhas to be, had to perfect all of these paramis in order to become a Buddha. And so there are beautiful stories of the lifetimes, the previous lives of Buddhas to be, how they perfected all of these paramis so that they became the default setting of their minds. And I'm not on the path to become a Buddha, but perfecting and having these paramis as a strength in my life as a default setting is something that I'm very interested in. And so it's a part of my devotion to incline the mind there when I see it going another way. I have a sense when they're present that the sense of well-being in my life cannot be violated. When they're weak, they can, of course. I don't feel that sense of well-being. But when they're strong, any one of them are strong, I feel like the inner sense of balance cannot be violated. That the mind will always come up with whatever is compassionate, whatever is wise to do, to say, to feel in my heart. Whatever we're faced with, we know that there can be some strength, some courage, even if we feel a moment of weakness. So we have that moment-to-moment commitment to feeling the presence of the resolve to have the paramis be the default setting in our lives. I know many of you have heard or read this quote by Goethe. So I do want to read it because it always gives me a sense of reminding me where to bring my energy. Goethe said, Until one is committed, there is a hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectualness. Concerning all acts of initiative, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitely commits oneself, providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issue from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance which no one could have dreamed would come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. So there is that commitment to turning our hearts, our minds, our lives in a certain direction. Many of us have learned resolve from our elders, from our parents, from people around us who have lived through hard times. The generations ahead of us, and even in our own generation, of course, we've gone through hard times, the wars of these last 10, 15, 20 years. Some of us in our 60s have been through the tragedies of the Vietnam War. Some of my dearest friends in high school were killed immediately after they went off to war. In the Vietnam War. And my parents, my own parents, went through World War II. Of course, many of your own parents and elders around you went through that, and we have learned many lessons from their resolve. Just observing my own mother as she went through the time of getting through her life after she arrived in America with me and being pregnant with my brother from the Philippines. She went through a lot to get through her life. So I learned resolve first from my mother, from remembering her. I was going to talk about the Bodhisattva, you know, the Buddha, that is the Buddha in our lifetime, and his resolve to become a Buddha. But I thought, no, I'm going to bring it to the present moment, to my life. What about talking about my mother? It's kind of a more interesting story, too, because it's kind of more in the present moment. So my mother met my father, who was in the army. My father's Swedish-American, and he was in the army in the Philippines. And the war was over, and my father came to America, to San Francisco, to start a new life for his family. So my mother and I followed on a boat, took 30 days to get over the Pacific Ocean and land in San Francisco. And she was pregnant with my brother. So to make a very long story short, in time my parents separated and divorced, and my mother raised my brother and I for a period of time on her own. She didn't speak very much English. She only had gotten through the fourth grade of elementary school, but she was a very able and wise and intelligent mother. And from a child's point of view, as I look back and I remember those times, I had no doubt in my mind that my mother had a strong commitment to get us through life, to feed us, to make sure that we had food and shelter, to give us an education, and to have the most loving and balanced life that we could. And so I really saw my mother's resolve from a very young age, and looking back, and how she got us through many difficult times. Of course, even those times to her when I kind of got to know what her life was in the Philippines, I mean, living in the projects of San Francisco was like heaven to her compared to how we lived in the Philippines, or how she could have lived in the Philippines. So in looking back, I saw that, yes, she had a lot of resolve, and I also saw how much patience she had to develop, how much equanimity she had, how much generosity she had in her life, how important living in harmony was to her. I mean, she stayed away from gossiping and she always wanted to just be as truthful as she could. I remember that she was so generous that we wouldn't let anybody leave our house who came to our house without a cup full of rice. We were we went to a particular church, and we got gifts from the church. One of them was always every month or every few months we got 100-pound or 50-pound sack of rice. So we always had that. And even if the man who was selling encyclopedias came by, she would give the man a sack of rice before she left. She was always giving and giving and giving. So from our elders, from our own parents, grandparents, we see all of these paramis and that sense of resolve to get through hard times. What activates resolve? I noticed that my mother had to have a lot of faith in herself. She had to trust in the goodness of life. And sometimes when I can't trust in myself, I really turn to how the abundance of the earth just keeps giving forth, remembering that in times of hardship, we had gardens. We went to the beach to gather seaweed and had that with, you know, tomatoes and fish sauce. And it was so good. Trusting something is a major supporter to activate resolve. Trusting that maybe for a moment we can keep going. Trusting that something will come forth. Some opening, maybe if we can just stand still for a moment, be quiet for a little bit. Even having a small bit of goodness in how it works for other people can help us to keep going. Indeed, I read in the Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification, which is a commentary on the Buddhist teaching, that the function of faith is to clarify and manifest as decisiveness, to turn our minds to being decisive. Okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to turn our minds in a certain direction. It brings forth courage and energy when we can just trust in ourselves, trust in the goodness of life, of another person. The proximate cause for this faith to arise is to have something to have faith in, to remember something to have faith in. So there were times in my own life, similar to my own mother's, when it was really difficult. Sometimes I wonder if, you know, kind of built in genetically or cellularly is how we follow in our mother's or our parents' footsteps, because there was a period of my own life when I had to raise my own children on my own. But I remembered how it was for my mother to keep going. There were so many challenges sometimes, and there were moments when, as Samuel Beckett would say, I can't go on, and then I go on. And it happened that way, where I didn't know whether I could keep going, you know, where maybe I just wanted to close my eyes and have it all end. But then I had the courage, I had the resolve to take the next step or just to wait for a moment. There was so much resolve in my life to get through that time, and so much connection with understanding that I could turn my life in a different direction. I remember coming across this quote from Charles Dubois that said, "The important thing is this, to be able at any moment to sacrifice what we are for what we could become." And there were so many times when I thought, all I'm going to be is raising this children. I couldn't see the end of it. You know, there was just, first there were the toddler ages, and then, you know, they were 5, 4, and 2 years old when I became a single parent, three of them. And, you know, they went through that, and then they went through their preteens, and then they went through their teenage years, and then the girls went through hating their mother years, and then, you know, getting them through college. Wow, I thought that would never end. I thought I was just going to be a mother all my life. Of course, I still am a mother, but I'm more their friend now. So I see that life can become different. It wasn't all about suffering through that. During that time, I saw what prevents or contaminates that feeling of clear resolve, that feeling when I was weakened. It was the opposite of faith that came up, doubt that I can't do this. There were times when I have to confess that I would even say to the children, and they were so small, I mean, maybe a lot of you are probably psychologists and probably going to cringe when I say this next thing, but I would say to them, "I can't do it anymore." I would say, "Where's my mom? Where's my own mom?" You know, and somehow my kids tell me now that, "Mom, we saw we were more strong than you sometimes." And so, I don't know, maybe it helped them. I've since apologized for those moments, but they all turned out to be really great human beings. There was indecision and wavering and not knowing what to do so many times, but then it went back to resolve, saying, I'm going to resolve to wait. I'm just going to resolve to be still. I'm going to resolve to take on another job or to go pick seaweed, you know. It was something always came up. There was a lack of commitment sometimes, you know. I just give up. And we just have to give up, give in, let go. It can lead to letting go. There was becoming disheartened and frustrated and not being willing to make those mid-course adjustments that we have to make along the way. We may have a sense of the direction that we want, like from here you can see, like from my house, I can look up to the top of the mountain that we live on. We live on the side of Haleakala. And I can see the top of the mountain, and I can actually see part of a pathway up there. And I know that I can make a resolve, a resolution, to go to the top of the mountain. And if I wanted to walk from my house to the top, I actually could. But it's not always going to be the pathway that I think it's going to be. I'm going to have to make a lot of mid-course applications, a lot of mid-course stopping and saying, what should I do now? I can't keep going because the thicket is too thick, or because it's raining too hard and I'm going to have to stop, and maybe it's all muddy and I'll have to go in a different direction. We have to be able to do that when we become frustrated and disheartened. I don't know how many of you remember, there's a story that's told in Dharma talks a lot about the rocket to the moon. 99% of the time, I mean, it has its direction to get from here to there, but 99% of the time it's off course. It's always like going that way instead of going, making the beeline. And it always comes back to where the course should be. It's off course and then it comes back. It's off course and then it comes back. There are many mid-course directions that we have to make in our lives. Remembering where the compass is really pointing towards and seeing if we can go at least in that direction. The path has many twists and turns, and we can't always go forward. Not too long ago, I was really feeling that in my life, like, oh, this thing about getting through all the county ordinances of doing what we need to do to build the Buddha barn that we're building on our land, you know, the so-called Buddha barn, which is really the hall. And it's been a lot of years now trying to get through with the water department, and sometimes feeling like we're going backwards. We are making headway, though. I know I say that every year, but we really are. One day, I was going somewhere in Maui, and I was trying to make a left turn, but I couldn't make a left turn. And so after being there for a long, long time and the traffic being so long and I couldn't get through, I decided I'm going to turn right. That means I'm going in the opposite direction, right? I'm going to turn right, and then I'm going to find a way to turn around and come back on the road that's going in the direction that I need to go. And then I realized, oh, that's what I need to do in my mind, is to realize that sometimes you have to turn this way before you can turn that way, because there's too much traffic. You know, there's too many people saying, no, you have to do this and that first and blah, 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 blah. So it really gave me a little more energy, and it said, okay, I'm really needing to go that way, but I'm needing to go this way, turn around before I go that way. So sometimes the path seems like taking you backwards before you can go in the direction of your true aspiration. Sometimes it's laziness and inertia that keeps us from not going forward. I'm remembering the story of one of my senior colleagues, Joseph Goldstein. Probably a lot of you know of him, read of his books, attended retreats and talks that he's given. And he tells the story of Dipa Ma, one of our teachers. And one time Dipa Ma said to him, Joseph, you should sit for 3 days. And Joseph said, he just thought, ha ha, I can sit for 3 days, you know, a weekend retreat. So he was saying, sure, I can sit for 3 days, he said to Dipa Ma, one of the great accomplished yogis who was a housewife and student of one of our teachers, Manindraji. And so Dipa Ma said, no, I didn't mean sit for a weekend retreat. I meant just sit down and sit for 3 days straight, not get up. And Joseph just laughed in her face. And she looked at him very straight-faced and said, don't be lazy. You know, just like, you can do it. You know what? I was in India a few years ago, and I met up with her daughter, Deepa. Deepa Ma is the mother of Deepa. So I said, what was the thing that was most astounding to you in your time with your mother? And she said, I remember the time when I was a little girl and we were in Burma, and she was at the Mahasi Monastery, the Mahasi Yedka, and her mother was practicing there, and she was with her mother. And Manindraji, our teacher, I have the same teacher, Joseph and I, and many others have, Manindraji had Manindraji as a teacher, was Deepama's teacher. And Manindraji gave her the aspiration and the adhitana means resolution, to sit for 3 days. And so her auntie said to her, now don't disturb your mother. She's going to be sitting there in that room for 3 days and she's not going to get up for eating or for going to the bathroom. Don't worry about her. We must be quiet. She's going to sit there. And Deepa said that that's what her mother did. She didn't get up to go to the bathroom. She didn't get up to eat. She just sat there. And she fulfilled her aditana, her resolution to do that. Her mind was so resolved and so strong. I'll tell you more about her a little later, in a minute. So the mind can get contaminated by inertia or by lack of faith in ourselves. And the direct opposite of that, of course, is a clear sense of resolve. It can be contaminated by impatience, by an attachment to having a result sooner than it's coming. It can be fear of failure. It can be another one of the hindrances, like aversion, not liking how it is in our own lives, in our own minds. But mature resolve is a feeling of being energetic in a balanced way. Sometimes we need to back off, sometimes we need to pick up our energy a little bit. The resolve is knowing clearly the direction of our aspiration, confidence that the goal is reachable, patient with a gentle, persevering kind of patience. We might have an interest in what's going on instead of kind of a grim determination. There might be a sense of flexibility in our minds, just keeping spacious with what's going on. So this is when resolve is very mature, when the hindrances aren't there, when there's not contamination in the mind. When I first met Munindraji, he was my first Dharma teacher. He told me about Deepa Ma, this housewife, a relative of his who lived in India. They both really have the same name. Manindra's, that was his name as a spiritual master, but his last name was Barua, as so with Deepa, Deepa Barua. Deepa Ma Barua. Deepa Ma wanted to see the end of suffering. She wanted to be totally free in her mind. This was her resolve. She had lost her husband, she had lost her 2 children, her health was really failing. But with Munindraji's advice, she ended up in that monastery in Burma, and she practiced with him. She wasn't well at the time, but she ended up being well during that time. There was a time that Munindraji tells, and maybe you've read about in the book about Deepa Ma. The name of the book is Knee Deep in Grace. She was not feeling so well, but she was so determined to keep up with her practice that she crawled on her hands and knees to the hall when the bell was rung, to come to the hall for a sitting. Her resolve and determination was steadfast. Her commitment was strong. She made it through all the inner hardships of her mind. And bit by bit, she found her mind and heart more and more free. Her life really affected my own sense of aspiration to be free. And with Manindra's support all the time, and during that time when I was growing up, so to say, in the Dharma, was in the 70s, and during that time there was always a lot of talk about being totally free, being enlightened, full liberation. It was spoken about very freely. And so that has always been, you know, the long-term aspiration, the long-term goal in my own mind and heart. And after several 10-day retreats that I had done in the early 70s and in the 80s, Munindraji said that it's time for you to do a long retreat. It's time for you to take a month. And I'm not teaching a month retreat, so I would advise you to go to the next time that one of his colleagues, Sayadaw Upandita, was offering a retreat. And the next time I could see that I could go was a year later in Australia. And I needed a year to prepare the way. So when I look back, I had strong resolve to do that. It was time to take a longer period. And so I had it in the mind that it was like my hair was on fire with the Dharma. And I really wanted to be whatever freer there could be in the mind, whatever that could be. So I resolved to do that retreat in 1 year's time. And it turns out that we had a very high mortgage at the time. And my husband at the time wanted also to lower the mortgage. So we decided, both of us decided to sell that house and to get a lower mortgage. And that allowed me to save some money for a year's time and to get away for a month, because I had to save enough to pay the bills. I was a big contributor to the budget to pay the bills and for being away for that whole month, and to also get there and pay for the retreat, etc., and to prepare the children for my being away. I was very attached to being a mother, and so I could see contamination of attachment getting in the way. And of course, the older three were very happy for me to go and be away for a month, but the youngest one was about 3 years old at that time. And they had a very good, she had a very good father and the elder siblings to kind of support her being away. So, okay, so I let go more. And I was able to get away to that retreat. And I can't say it was easy. It was a retreat from hell, I call it. Probably some of you who have heard some of my other Dharma talks have talked about that retreat. There was a lot of inner turmoil, a lot to let go of, and there was a lot going on around me too. But there was tremendous resolve to get through, to free my heart to whatever level could be freed at that point. The inner defilements were relentless, but the mindfulness and the strength of resolve was stronger during that time. It's not always that way, but it was during that time. Of course, I wanted to go home, but I felt the pull of freedom more than I felt the pull of motherhood, because I felt everyone was safe. The commitment was absolutely resolute, and it was a huge turning point for my practice, a huge turning of the mind, kind of falling into another stream of where the life was to be headed. And so when we feel that resolve to free the mind, to free the heart, it's important to really pay attention, to answer the call, whatever it is, if it's from going from a weekend retreat to a 5-day retreat, but maybe if we've been in enough 5-day or 9-day retreats, to taking a longer period of time. If we haven't been sitting every day, to find a time, 10 minutes, half an hour. It's a tremendous, tremendous moment of peace for us that leads the way our whole lives, just 10 minutes a day. So I'd like to end with this poem by Mary Oliver that says it probably a lot better than I can. And this is her poem about the journey. And this is kind of speaks to what it was for my life during that time. That was about 25, 30 years ago now. The journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds. And there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Just letting that sink in for a few moments. Thank you for listening to the Dhamma this evening. We have just a few minutes before 9 o'clock, and I'm willing to stay a little longer, but I know some of you have to leave. You have had people at home taking care of your elders and the younger ones, so please go on ahead. And if there's any questions about resolve or your practice. Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about resolve and will?
Resolve where?
Resolve sort of and will, like the will to do something versus like.
Oh, resolve and will.
Resolve.
Yeah, the will to make it happen versus the resolve.
Yeah.
They can be very closely related. But there's one word that I want to use that might be different from will, and then to use the will again later too. It's the willingness. So we really need the willingness to turn the mind and really look at that direction that we want our lives to go into. And sometimes it's hard because the way it has been is so comfortable. Even when we're suffering in it, you know? And it takes so much energy to change things from how they are, even though we know it needs to be changed. It takes so much energy and willingness to just turn the life towards something different. So we need the willingness to do that. And all of those things, you know, energy, patience, etc. Wisdom, compassion for ourselves, and compassion for others, all of those come into play when we consider willingness. But then when we talk about will, or maybe willpower, we have to be careful there because we need a bit of willpower. But when it gets to be too grim, or when it gets to like we're holding on too tightly to a result, or it's not here fast enough, or that's where we have to be very mindful, very, very aware, because that can take over. And we're not realizing how identified we are with that. And then that can lead to a closing down and a giving up. So willpower can be too strong. And we really need this moment to moment, being willing to accept conditions as they are, but still being in tune with our commitment and our devotion. Balance. So we're checking it out all the time. Yeah, that's something that always comes up in relationship to resolve, will. Yeah. So think back to when I asked you in the beginning, how was it for you when you remembered back to a time when you had kind of a balanced energy of being committed to your aspiration? What was that like? Then it's sometimes it's more like a feeling than a word. Yeah. Say, can you? There's an energy that moves you forward. I just want to repeat, because that was so beautiful what you said. It's liberating, because there's no more deliberation, and it's an energy that moves you forward, whether, what was the rest?
Whether you know where you're going or not.
It's true. Sometimes doesn't it feel like you're trusting? Like you don't know where you're going, but it might be in a totally different direction than you thought you were going. But somehow it feels right. Yeah. I love that you said that. That's your feeling. You described it. Does anybody else have a description of how it was in their own life, in your own life? Come on. I know it's there. It's energizing. Yeah. Yes. Spacious and
light.
Uh-huh.
It feels like the resistance stops. The way is open.
The resistance stops and the way is open. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many of you have tuned in to there's resoluteness, but on the other side, or there's somewhere nearby, there's a letting go? That's part of the feeling sometimes. The power that you feel. Letting go of how you think it should be. Any questions or any other comments about that? Yeah. Saying something more about trust in relationship to resolve. Yeah. Well, first, if you can find trust in yourself, find faith in yourself, to think about something that you did in the past, that, okay, you were able to do this and you can do it again. You got through that event and now you can get through this event too. Sometimes I'll even say that to myself. Well, I did it before, I can do it again. You know, giving Dharma talks was really hard for me. It's easier now. But every time I would get up, I would say something like that to myself. You know, I did it last week, you know, when I did the 3-month course. I can do it again this week. And if you can't look towards trusting yourself, then see if you can trust something else. like if somebody can, someone else outside of your own experience inspires you and say, well, this person can do it. And maybe you can relate to how that person is a little bit, that has qualities similar to yours. And maybe you, because you see that person, you can do that too. Like the example I gave with my mother. Or trusting the goodness of life. You know, sometimes we're just so caught up in negativity. I'm speaking from experience, not that, you know, I'm putting that on how it is for everybody, but sometimes I've been so caught up in depression and negativity that I can't see one glimmer of light, but I'll intentionally try to remember something about it, about the beauty of life, or that it changes. It's not always like this. So we have to actually work on it, work on trusting. It's not that it's going to come out of nowhere. We really have to set our minds to it sometimes. Remember something that you can have faith and trust in. Okay. It's a minute after 9, so it's a good time to stop. So may your journeys be full of fulfillment, whatever they are, and your aspirations for life include some of these paramis. I'm going to put up this parami list. I'll put it down out there in the back, and if any of you, you could look it up online too. Just look up P-A-R-A-M-I, parami, and they'll all come up, the 10 or the 6 in the Mahayana tradition. And copy them down. And some people put the list up on their refrigerator, or take one of them for a whole year and practice just that one. See how it goes. Okay, thank you. See some of you tomorrow.